In Malaysia, the days-old government of Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad has launched a police investigation that many Malaysians believe should have happened years ago. The luxury homes and offices of the former Prime Minister Najib Razak were raided by police overnight. Those raids were still going on today, combing through the belongings of Mr. Najib and his wife. Journalists standing outside the property saw luxury handbags being seized. The focus is the billions of dollars that were siphoned from Malaysia's sovereign wealth fund, known as 1MDB, some of which is alleged to have gone through Najib Razak's bank accounts. Dr. Mahathir says he wants the investigation to be completed in his first 100 days in office. He's held a news conference this afternoon in which he's been asked about how police are treating Mr. Najib.
Yeah, the police have got their SOP. I didn't know that they should raid at night, but my instruction is very clear. I'm not going to torture people and things like that. I want people to be treated decently.
People to be treated decently. Dr. Mahathir Mohamad there saying police investigating the former Prime Minister Najib Razak are following their SOP, standard operating procedures. He was speaking in Kuala Lumpur this afternoon. In a moment, we will get you up to speed on what 1MDB is, this massive financial scandal in Malaysia, because it is going to keep coming around as the investigations continue. But today, Australia has been criticised by the freed and pardoned Malaysian opposition figure, Anwar Ibrahim, for failing to defend democracy and for appeasing ruthless, corrupt, authoritarian leaders, he says. Well, Australia's Foreign Minister Julie Bishop joined me from Perth a short time ago. Julie Bishop, thank you for joining us. Did Australia fail to speak up in defence of democracy in Malaysia, as Anwar Ibrahim is reported to have said in The Australian this morning?
First, I welcome Anwar Ibrahim's release. I believe he has much to offer the people of Malaysia, and this royal pardon is important because it allows him to again participate fully in Malaysia's politics, and we expect to join the government in due course. As to whether we did enough to support him, over a long time, successive Australian governments have raised our deep concerns with the Malaysian government over Anwar's treatment. I recall in early 2015 publicly expressing deep concern over the severity of his sentence, and I made representations to the political leaders in Malaysia, and we've certainly done a great deal behind the scenes in trying to bring to the government's attentions our deep concerns with other countries. We have a positive and broad-based relationship with Malaysia, whomever is in government. I mean, they're our 10th largest trading partner. But as with any close and significant partnership, there are always points of difference, and we've had some very frank discussions on civil and political rights with Malaysia at senior levels. I was last in Malaysia in 2017, and I met with not only government ministers but with civil society leaders and human rights advocates to discuss developments in the country. I raised human rights issues with senior ministers and, of course, the case of Anwar Ibrahim. So I think our level of protest and objection was appropriate in the circumstances.
I mean, he did make some other very strong comments to the effect that Australia, countries like Australia, stable democracy should not be seen to be appeasing ruthless, corrupt, authoritarian leaders in the interests of further trade and economic developments. He may have been in prison, but surely he had a very good handle on the representations being made or not.
Well, he should also know that sovereign nations don't appreciate interference in the political and judicial affairs of their country, just as Australia is very determined to ensure that our sovereignty is not breached and others don't interfere in our political and judicial processes. Likewise, Malaysia would not appreciate that either. We have raised our concerns with the Malaysian officials, with government ministers. Our High Commission in Kuala Lumpur works actively to promote human rights, the rule of law, media freedoms, strengthening democratic institutions. And I do recognise the new government's stated commitment to the rule of law and good governance. So I'm looking forward to working with the new Prime Minister Mahathir, but also should Anwar come back into cabinet. He said he was not hasty to return and he'd give Mahathir and the government his complete support so long as the government was committed to the reform agenda. I'm looking forward to working with him as well. Of course, he'd have to win a by-election and then be appointed to cabinet, as you would in Australia.
Yes, some similarities. Minister, can I ask you about a matter elsewhere in the region, North Korea, which has cancelled talks yesterday with the South unexpectedly. That's threatened the planned Trump-Kim summit that's just weeks away now. How confident are you that that summit will go ahead?
I'm disappointed by the cancellation of the high-level inter-Korean talks by North Korea. It's apparently on the basis of South Korean-US military exercises, but these are long-standing, they're annual, they're entirely legitimate. I understand also that the summit with the US is still scheduled to go ahead on the 12th of June, and so we hope that at that summit we will see steps towards a genuine peace agreement between North and South Korea. North Korea is committed to complete denuclearization, most recently in the Panmunjom Declaration of the 27th of April. But I think the international community's demand has been quite clear: complete, verifiable, irreversible dismantlement of North Korea's nuclear weapons programs and an end to its ballistic missile program. So we need to see concrete steps from North Korea that it is genuine in denuclearising and working towards peace on the Korean Peninsula.
But doesn't it now seem clear from what North Korea has been saying over time that it has no intention of giving up its nuclear weapons as the US wants it to, effectively unilaterally?
Well, this is precisely why the US-North Korea summit will be so important. It's where the US and North Korea can begin the difficult but essential process of agreeing on concrete actions and timeframes towards an outcome of denuclearization and peace on the Korean Peninsula. Now, for North Korea to hint at missing that summit naturally raises questions about the extent of Kim Jong-un's commitment to denuclearization. And I've always been concerned, and I've made this clear, as have other foreign ministers, that North Korea have made promises in the past. In fact, every promise that's set out in the recent Panmunjom Declaration, North Korea has made in the past.
And
they
broken.
Have not, indeed, they've not honoured those agreements. So there is a level of scepticism about how genuine North Korea is, but the sanctions have been working. That's why I believe North Korea started to come to the negotiating table, because the international community's strategy of maximum diplomatic, political and economic pressure has been working. No doubt President Trump's threat of military action had an impact, and we must continue to fulfil the UN Security Council resolution's sanctions strategy and continue to maintain those sanctions on North Korea until it returns to the negotiating table and shows that it's genuine in stopping its illegal nuclear weapons and ballistic missile programs.
Julie Bishop, thank you for joining PM this evening.
My pleasure.
Australia's Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop.